This questioner writes, in one of your talks, you asked us to contemplate on five spiritual faculties. You had given some ideas on faith. Could you please guide us on this too? In offering some guidance on the five spiritual faculties, I'm going to reference teachings that I received from my teachers in Thailand, particularly Ajahn Chah and Ajahn Tate, because looking at my teachers, I feel very much a beginner. First, to say that the five spiritual faculties, along with Indriya Sangvara, or intentional composure, and Hiriyotapa, these are the most basic tools that we need in our spiritual work, which is why I tend to talk about them so often. First, with faith, or in Pali, Saddha, I think of it as like the fragrance of a flower. For instance, if you think of the fragrance of honeysuckle, you can definitely sense it. However, you can't get it in the same way that you can get the woody texture of the honeysuckle if you touch it, or the colour of the honeysuckle if you photograph it, or the flavour of the honeysuckle if you pluck the flower and then suck the the nectar, as we used to do as children. You can't get the fragrance of a flower in the same way, and likewise, we can't get the power of faith or saddha or trust or confidence in the same way as we might get some of the other faculties, like energy, for instance. And it's important we understand this, because as significant as it is, trying to make it certain the way that we make some other things certain is not going to help. The way we relate to faith is we trust in it. Like we sense the fragrance of a flower. You can't grasp it in the way you might want to. Or like floating on water. If you're in the ocean and you lie on your back and you learn how to breathe and relax and most essentially trust, then despite what you might think, the water supports you. You can float. If you try too hard to do it, then you sink. So trusting in true principles, trusting that the Buddha was awakened, trusting that there is a way, all matter very much on this journey. And talking about this, Ajahn Chah mentioned the three levels of faith, an initial, or what we might call entry level, whereby we get inspired by hearing something and it sort of rings true. So, oh yeah, it's kind of somewhat akin to believing. It's not secure, however it counts. And then if we act on that faith, that trust, that confidence, that this path of practice is worth investing in, and we start making effort, then we start to see some things for ourselves, and that is another level of faith. And then he talks about the verified faith, or the unshakable faith of the awakened ones, whereby there's irreversible understanding. The second of the five spiritual faculties is virya, which literally translates as energy. I tend to translate it as intensity, because that talks about what it does or what it feels like. In the same way, for instance, as the process of transforming carbon dust into diamonds requires intensity. Yes, it takes energy, like pressure and heat. And that intensity is essential for the process of transformation. Likewise, with the spiritual work, transforming greed, hatred, and delusion into wisdom and compassion takes energy. There's energy that can be generated because we're interested in escaping from this tedious mediocrity of casual existence that we so easily get pulled down into. And then that interest encourages intensity, energy. There's also another aspect to this, which is the energy that spontaneously becomes available when we're challenged by something, like, for instance, if you get a difficult medical prognosis and there's energy, like, keeps you awake at night, disturbs you. How do we relate to that energy? Can we expand our field of awareness? Can we open up our hearts? Can we meet that intensity in a way whereby it might fuel this process of purification or this process of transformation? Then the third factor of sati, which, as we would all know, generally translates as mindfulness. And there's a little difficulty with that, because at least the way these days we use the word mind, we think it means what's going on in our heads. Well, that's part of it. However, if you read the Buddha's discourse, the Satipatthana Sutta, or the setting up the foundations for sati, for mindfulness, you know, it's much more than just what's going on in our heads. Which is, when I talk about it, I tend to talk about embodied mindfulness, to help bring us towards remembering there's much more than just being somewhat aware of what's going on in our heads. There's also what's going on in our foot, in our elbow, in our hearts, in our shoulders. It could be translated as attentiveness, alertness. One image that the Buddha gave was like the gatekeeper and the gate and the city wall. The gatekeeper sees who comes in and who goes out and pays attention to their movements. And likewise with this embodied mindfulness, paying attention, for instance, to the feelings that we have, not just the ideas we might have in our head about the feelings, but also feeling our feelings. Like in the Satipatthana Sutta, know the feelings and know the feelings in the feelings. With praise and blame as an example, how do we feel if somebody blames or criticizes us? That disliking and then the disagreeable feeling. Do we have the quality of embodied attention to feel in our hearts what we're doing? Like, are we contracting around that pain, or are we open and expanded? Do we have the kind of relationship whereby we can study the reaction that we're having to blame or praise, the agreeable feeling of praise? Do we have the kind of relationship with our hearts, with our bodies, whereby we can feel what we feel when we're praised? So embodied mindfulness. And then the fourth factor of samadhi, which I generally translate as collectedness, often translated as tranquility or concentration. The term collectedness, I think, contributes something to the kind of effort that we might be making if we're cultivating samadhi, like gathering our attention together, steadying attention. Just how steadied our attention needs to be, there's an ongoing big conversation being had around that topic. Some people might say, well, you know, what it says in the scriptures, it says this, it says that, and indeed it does say that. And if you're following what's known as the Jhāti Vimutti path of practice, and it's characterized by a highly refined quality of samadhi, most of us these days don't have that. And so Ajahn Chah's encouragement to cultivate enough samadhi to read a book. In this case, what we're doing is trying to read the body-mind. Like when somebody praises us, do we get lost in that pleasant feeling? Or do we have enough steadiness, collectedness of attention to be able to study it? That's exercising collectedness in daily life. And then in formal practice, if we're always getting lost And as the weeks and months and years go by, we're not finding ourselves more alive and more here, then perhaps we need to put a bit more effort into cultivating collectedness. And the fifth of panya, or discernment, or wisdom. Here I'd like to refer to a teaching I heard from the time I was living with Ajahn Tate, where it was reported he asked some monks, "The eye sees itself by looking in a mirror. How does the citta, or how does the heart, see itself?" And then he answered his own question with panya, or wisdom. It's that self-reflective capacity of consciousness to know itself. And it's the goal of practice. Saddha, or faith, is important. Virya, or energy, or intensity, is important. Sati, obviously, embodied mindfulness, is important. Collectedness, samadhi, is important. All of this is in service of the precipitation of insight, or wisdom, or accuracy of perception. So instead of seeing what we project out onto the world, there's the seeing of what is. And for the awakened ones, that's their experience, the unobstructed wisdom, the other side of which is compassion. Another aspect of wisdom that's worth dwelling on is that it has the ability to ask the right kind of question at the right time in the right way, fueled by interest in transforming greed, hatred, and delusion into something profoundly beautiful and fitting. Thank you very much for your question, and I hope that's helpful.